Session number 23224, Rule 3.
Mr. Pewwood, Rule 3. What sort of unit was it that you joined when you got your barracks in India?
Well, I was still officially a storekeeper. That's what I remained as.
Was this barracks a depot?
Yes. But the depot for the transport depot was about 5 miles away. We used to have to go there to collect material, you know, for different regiments.
What regiments were based at the depot? Do you remember?
No. It was mostly the Indian Army personnel.
Yeah. But were they tank units? No.
They were Indian armies.
Yeah.
Well, I say Indian Army, I mean native Indian Army.
Yes. So what sort of stores were you keeping for them?
Empty stores. Military transport stores.
Was that something new to you?
Not new, just different. We used to go to this depot for tyres and things like that, you know.
What kind of job were you doing? Was it the same kind of thing?
Yeah, same kind of thing. Yeah.
So you were issuing stores on in
there? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And we used to make out the various forms. Then we used to motor to this depot where all the spares were kept.
Yeah. Were you concerned with handing them out as well as taking them, or?
No, we was always taking them.
Right. So this is the other side of what you've been doing at Sandhurst, isn't it?
More or less.
Yeah.
The only thing was I used to liaison with a native Indian Army captain. Mm. Quite a nice chap too. Yeah. He knew his job.
Yeah. Mm. What about the other personnel in the stores? How many of you were there in that
About five.
About five. Mm. Were they all British or did you have any
all
Indian?
All British, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was quite a big operation. There was units all over in India, you know, various places. You know, people coming out of the line, if you can call it that. People were back in the line.
Yes. What were your living conditions like?
Very good. Yeah. Very good. It was it was all open, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. Was this a properly built barracks?
Oh, yes, properly built, yeah. Mm. And you used to have a bed with the netting, you know.
Mosquito netting.
Mosquito netting.
Did you have a routine working day?
Yes.
How did that go? What time did you start work?
Start work about 8, I suppose. I don't know. Yeah.
Did you work through the day?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we had lunch.
Yeah.
Of course.
What could you do when you were off duty? What?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing to do. I think the thing I used to do was write letters. I think I wrote a letter every day.
was the mail reliable?
Yeah, very good. Very good. They were very good. You used to have to take it up to be... you had to be careful what you wrote. Because it was always censored. Yeah. Everyone. I didn't like that, but still. You couldn't say all you wanted to say. So there it was.
Did you normally get a letter back?
Oh yes, they were very good too. Very good.
Yeah. While you were there, did you have any feeling that there was a sense of political tension in the area?
Yes. We had several run-ins with the native people, these agitators. We were stopped on the road once. What they did, they were very clever. They got an old lady to stand in the middle of the road, and then she pretended to be knocked over.
How did you get out of that?
By being a bit aggressive, I think, showing them our revolvers.
What did they do when you showed them revolvers?
They sort of backed off. We drove away. It was no good. You couldn't contemplate sort of eight at all. There were too many of them. But that was the beginning of the uprising in India, you know, with Nehru, was it?
Nehru, yes.
Nehru, Gandhi. People like that. They wanted independence. God knows what they did with it when they got it.
You mentioned you had contact with an Indian captain who knew what he was doing. You know, did you have much contact with other Indians?
No, he was the main one.
Yeah.
The others were more or less private soldiers, I suppose, although they were all frightened to death of them.
I mean, were you able to speak to them? Could you speak any of their
language? No, they couldn't speak English.
And you couldn't speak Urdu or Hindi? What sort of food were you getting out there?
Well, you always knew what food you were getting, because every day you could see a cow coming down the road from Vigo or you knew that's what you was getting. That was beef.
Right.
And then when you saw goats coming down the road, you knew that was lamb. That was it.
Was that cooked in the Indian style or
cooked in the European style.
British style, yeah. Did you ever try the local cuisine?
Hey?
Did you ever try the local food?
No. Yeah. We went in a restaurant once and we had bacon and eggs and chips. Mm. That wasn't bad. Yeah. But the eggs were the tiniest things I'd ever seen.
Do you remember the end of the war in the Far East? Do you remember
what? Yeah. Well, we celebrated what was the first one called? D-E-Day.
V-E-Day.
V-E-Day.
Yes.
We celebrated that. We were all given a pack of 60 Indian-made player cigarettes. Horrible. And then when the end of the war came, DJ Day, we were treated to a pint of beer each.
Do you remember what you thought when you first heard about the atomic bombs being dropped on Japan?
Very pleased, actually. Very pleased. Mm. Nothing was too bad for those so-and-sos.
The end of the war came, the bombs were dropped. What happened after that?
Well, we sort of stood around. We had a dugout colonel. And at the end of the war, we had a lot of Australians come into the depot. And he used to drill them what was called the Mardam.
Yes.
You know. And when the VE Day, VJ Day came, they mutiny more or less, and they were transported back to Australia as fast as they could go get them there. So they were very mutinous.
What sort of things did they do when they were mutinous?
Well, they weren't mutinous. They just didn't take any notice of the dugout colonel. Just in taking news of them, they say, a bait turn, they didn't. That sort of thing, you know. And there's nothing he could do, really, could he? What could he do? And then when the end of the war came, and they were transported back to Australia, I always remember, I stood up in these army trucks, and I said, goodbye and back again.
Goodbye and bugger you.
Yeah, to the colonel. Oh, yes, they were right. They were right, so-and-so.
Did you have anything to do with this colonel?
No. No, we used to go on parade with the Australians at times, but it was only just a sort of fill-in, you know, just something to do.
Because there's no work to be done.
No.
How did you get on with the Australians?
I thought they were all right. I thought they were very good. Mm-hmm. Bit rough, I thought. Very good. Mm. Very kind-hearted. New Zealanders were the best. Got on very well with the New Zealanders.
Where did you meet them? Was there a canteen or anything of that sort in the barracks?
Yes.
How did you get home?
Came home by liner, the Orion, I think it was called. Mm. It was the flagship of the P&O liner. Line. I think it was called the Orion. Yeah, I think it was. It was a single funnel liner, but it was very, very good.
Was that a comfortable voyage?
Well, yes. Well, I did. I knew how fatiguing it was going to be, you know, standing around all day and every day. So I volunteered to become a baker. And I baked bread and rolls all through the war. And by the way, we escorted 600 POWs from railway?
The Burma Railway.
POWs, 600 of them.
They were on the same ship?
Yeah, we brought them back with us. And all I used to do, I had the job, apart from the bakery, of making up jellies, individual jellies. And what I used to do, I used to put all this jelly powder in these baths, galvanized baths, and used to turn the steam on to them and mix it all up. Then after that, I used to dip it into individual moulds, you know, moulded jelly moulds. And then put it in these, what they call cool things. They were like, looked like an oven, but they weren't. They were things that cool things down.
Refrigerators?
Yeah. Well, not exactly refrigerators, but very similar. Yeah. There was rows of them, you know.
What sort of condition were these prisoners of war in?
Oh, I think it's the first time I had a tear in my eye. I saw some of them that was all they could do. Is to, they were carried up onto the ship, most of them. But we had to be so careful what we could feed them with. Their stomachs couldn't take any normal food. We used to give them a little rice and anything gradually, you know.
Could you see an improvement by the time you got to the end of the voyage?
Yes, a slight improvement. They were more cheerful. But in any case, they were cheerful because they were going home. Mm. But I had come in contact with lots and lots of them. Yeah. I remember one poor chap. I struck a friendship with him before we even went on the ship. They were in this camp, you see. We put them in the camp until the ship was ready, because the ship was coming from Australia. We were taking the Australians back. And until the ship arrived in Bombay, we sort of looked after them, you know, as best we could, not that we could do much. We give them clean clothes and baths and things like that. But this particular chap, I struck up a friendship with him. And he was looking forward to coming home. He was, because he hadn't seen his two sisters and father and mother since the beginning, since he was drafted to India, Germany, Burma. And he was telling me about this, and I was very happy for him. But some officer, I don't know who he was talking to the this chap about going home. He said, "Well," he said, "I'm sorry to tell you, you've got no home to go to. Your two sisters and father and mother were killed in a bomb." And do you know what? He went into the toilet and hung himself. And I walked straight in the next morning, walked straight into him. He was hanging. Poor devil. I still remember that.
That sounds like a real tragedy.
Real tragedy. Yeah. But one of the funniest things, when we got to St. Anthony, there was a staff sergeant that he'd shown some of this handful of rubies. I said, "I hope you drop them, I'll pick them up." But anyway, the point was, he got them off of Maharaja's daughter. And then, as soon as the ship docked at St. Anton, they arrested him and sent him straight back to India. I always remember that. Lots and lots of things like that. Lots and lots.
And what happened to you when you got back to Southampton? You were still in the army.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I had 2 months leave to come, so I had that. And I went back up to the military academy and saw the other staff. And they said, "Well, at the moment, everything at 6 and 7. You see, everybody that's coming back, because they had to take them back because Churchill had said so." And
your job was kept open for you? Yeah.
Yeah, but there wasn't a job. There was no job, you see. Everything was, there was no lathe, no nothing. The only thing that was left was the blacksmith shop, which I took over eventually. But the first 2 months, I spent with all the fatigue staff and lots of, what do you call it, people? Servants.
College servants.
We spent 2 months, more or less, filling in all the trenches that we dug, that had been dug.
What sort of trenches were they?
Well, just a trench.
But were they slip trenches?
Yes, more or less. Mm. They were only in case of Jerry Bond place,
They weren't fighting trenches?
No.
So the refuge.
The refuge. You jumped in there if there was a sign of any bombers.
Yeah.
Although the military academy was bombed twice, you know. One bomb between the old building and the new building. Mm. It blew away every window of the old building. Every single window, back and front.
Was that when you were there?
No, that's when the wife was there.
Oh.
Because the wife had two choices, poor girl. They said, "You either join the ATS or we can give you a job," because they knew about me, you see.
Yes.
"And give you a job in the new college tea rooms." She did that all through the war. Had no choice. She had to do it.
Drafted in.
Mm.
Mm. What was she doing in the tea rooms?
She was making sandwiches and things like that. You know. It was only a light refreshment place. Mm. It was in the clock tower.
Had she worked before the war?
Oh yes, yes.
What did she do?
She was in the hotel trade.
So she's in the right sort of trade, really.
Yes. Yeah. Sure, she knew what to do.
Yeah.
She met Prince Galitzin. I think he's the grandfather of the present prince. And she knew him very well.
Was he in New College at the time?
Prince Galitzin, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a sort of a older cadet, really.
Yes.
I think he must be the grandfather of the present prince. 60 years ago, isn't it? Yeah, she knew a lot of title people at that time.
So you had 2 months filling in the old slit trenches.
And then they the word come through, please take over your old post job, yeah. So I did. The only thing was I had nothing to work with. Mm. There was plenty of jobs wanted doing throughout the economy and that, but I had nothing to work with. Mm. But funnily, a week after I was given my job back, they called me a blacksmith, by the way.
Had you ever been a blacksmith?
Well, I'd done the forging, you see.
Yes.
And tempering and all that sort of thing. So I knew how to do it. Mm.
But it wasn't your main trade, was it?
No.
I mean, your main trade was metalworking.
Yeah, metalworking.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Show you the sort of thing I used to be able to do. I made these two.
Ah, yes.
Now, this is what is known as blind sole. Oh, by the way, that's the pre-war model of the tank that we used then.
Yes.
Here was a machine gun and the tank on the other side.
There's a machine gun on each side of the hull.
Yeah.
And then there's a main gun in the turret.
Yeah. And this, that little bit there was the drivers.
There's a little sponson at the front of the hull. Yes.
Well, the point was, when I made those, now, you think they were solid brass, wouldn't you?
You would.
No, yes. Well, they're not.
They're hollow.
They're what is known as blind soldering.
Ah.
In other words, they're all individual bits
that
are put together.
So you make the parts and then you put them together?
Yeah, mm. And you solder them on the inside from the outside. And that takes some doing.
I bet it does. It must.
Well, you can't see any solder joints, can you?
No sign at all, no. No. Yeah. Very precise work.
Yeah. Well, that's what I used to do.
Yes.
And the other thing I used to do was this. That's a model I made.
Yes.
A Napoleonic gun.
Yes. It's a field piece.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it was modelled on one of those estates of the old building there.
The guns outside Old College. Yes.
No, yeah, Old College, yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
Was there a lot of demand for model making? Was it, you know, or was it just something?
No. After the war, all model making stopped.
Ah. Was it then something you did for fun rather than?
I did it, you know, just to keep me handy, more or less.
Yes. But what was your? But were you still expected to teach cadets how to
work
with metal?
They're all finished.
They're finished.
Yes. There was no more engineering.
Oh.
As I say, they went to the other college, whatever that was. I've forgotten the name of it.
So what was your new job then from 1946 on?
Well, I was officially a blacksmith for the military academy.
Yes.
But I was to tell you how much kind of jobs I did.
What were the duties of the blacksmith supposed to be? Were you supposed to be shoeing horses?
Oh, no,
like that?
What do you call them?
Farrier.
Farrier.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't do that. I told them at the time I wasn't going to touch horses, no matter what.
Not interested in horses? No.
I didn't intend to get near them either. Mind you, I did a lot to for the stables and that.
Yes.
You know those things that come down, you know, the door of the stables?
Yeah.
It's a steel thing. It comes down like that. Goes up again, and it's all the, and the horse looks like over the centre bit.
Yes, the frames. Yes.
Oh, I made all those.
Oh.
I'll tell you something else too. You know all the Napoleonic cannon in front of the old building. Well, I haven't got the original cannon. They haven't got the original French wheels. You know what they are? Because I did it.
You made the wheels?
No. I didn't make the wheels. No. What we did, they were rotting. Well, after, 100 years or so, they were rotting. Then they were just, if they moved the wheels around once a week, a turn or two, they lasted longer. But anyway, they didn't. So, they were rot. They wondered what they was going to do about the wheels. So, what one of their chaps, one of the officers, he got in contact with 43 Command Workshop, and they, funnily enough, had some 1418 horse-drawn artillery wheels, and they fitted more or less.
So you brought those in?
Yeah, more or less. So, when you see those wheels, they're 1418 artillery wheels. What happened to the Napoleonic wheels? I don't know.
So would I be right in saying what you were doing was sort of any sort of metalwork that was
any
needed?
Any sort of metalwork. Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. If there was, I made some therastands for the chapel. They were adjustable. They had a big round top, and they were adjustable to move up. But it was all fancy scrollwork, you know.
Yes.
I made all those. Whether they're still there or not, I don't know. Mm. Another thing I did was paste sticks. Remember? Yeah. They still got paste sticks.
They still use paste sticks.
Well, I used to repair them all. You know, the bottoms used to go.
The brass ferrules, aren't there?
I used to make new brass ferrules and fit them. And, anything like that. Another thing I did, I looked after all the sports equipment. That's the starting blocks and anything else that things you jump over. What do you call them?
Hurdles.
Hurdles. They used to get broken, you know, and dented and busted. I used to repair all those. I think the funniest thing I ever did was a 16-pound hammer. They call them the hammers, don't they?
Yes.
Well, this one, after they'd weighed it, painted, it was about 2 inches short. You know,
the handle, yeah.
It'd been so thrown so many times that it had lost 2 inches. So what I did, I drilled a hole in it and tapped the hole, you know, thread, and then I put on the scales, and I put so much lead into the hole. Now, the thing that I turned to screw into the ball, I weighed that as well. And when it comes to exactly 16 pound, I screwed it in. So it's still 16 pound ball. And I think the funniest thing, well, not the funniest, the most peculiar thing, the statue of the Prince Imperial on the New Brighton, it's still there.
Still there.
Oh. Well, his belt and his sword fell off. And I put it back on.
So you're a sculptor as well?
Is it still on?
It's still there. Who were you working for then when you came back?
I was working for technical major quartermaster. The other quartermaster, the other tradesmen were attached to the quartermaster.
Yes.
You know, the other one.
So they worked for the main quartermaster, you worked for